Oh boy. Well, it's already recording. How are you guys doing?
Good. We should do a pre-show, the ritual of all of us clearing our throat before we start.
We should.
It's really loud.
It's super loud. Hi. Anyway, what's new?
What's new? Spring is coming, but I woke up Saturday morning and there was like 5 inches of snow in the backyard.
What? Seriously?
Yeah.
What? Wow.
It was insane. I had no idea it was coming. But it was all melted. It was one of those like fake snowstorms that come and by noon. It's 45 degrees and all the snow is almost completely gone. But it was really a shock to see. But it's coming. I did a lot of spring cleanup yesterday, working around the house. And the trees, I just sent you guys a picture. The trees are falling one by one along the property line. My house is big colonnade of trees around the whole thing, and all the trees that face to the west get the easterly wind, and one by one the trees are falling over. I lost three big giant trees, but the good thing is, this is going to lead into what I'm going to start working on with the sawmill. I'm able to take these trees, I haven't done it yet, but I'm harvesting the ones that have fallen down, and I'm taking them into 10-foot sections, and I'm going to make the porch poles. And I brought this project up, but by the end of the summer I'm going to have 9 porch poles for the back of my house. My front porch, I bought porch poles last year from a company in Canada. This year, I'm going to make the same design myself for the back. And the ones in the front are all pieced together, bits and pieces of pine. The back are going to be solid, so I fully expect them to crack and all that kind of checking and stuff, but that's going to be part of the charm. So I'm going to let that happen. So these trees that I'm harvesting have been dead for a year. One of them fell over yesterday. I don't want them to fall over, but I just don't have the time to cut them down. They're like 60, 70 feet tall. And the one that fell over yesterday has been dead for about 3 years. And I went to the root ball. I sent you guys the picture. The root ball gripped up out of the ground. And I went to the root ball, and there's a couple of the roots are broken. And I touched them, and they're dry as a bone. So this tree is like standing dead. So when I sawmill them, it's not going to be all spitting water and stuff. So I might be able to get right to work, which is exciting. So today I'm going to do that. I'm going to cut that tree up. And this week, a video that I'm putting out is about the Harvey bandsaw, the new Harvey bandsaw that's coming out, the intelligent 15-inch Harvey bandsaw. So I do a review and test of that. That video will be out Monday, I think, because it coincides with their release date.
That's got AI built into it, right?
It's AI. It's actually hands-free. It's the only hands-free bandsaw that's out there.
Yeah. Cool. You can't release a new product without AI integrated into
it. That's right. It doesn't
have a hands-free bandsaw. I don't want to get mad at me. It's a joke. Hands-free bandsaw. No, it's the intelligent bandsaw, and there's computer controls to give you some guidance as to how to use certain parts of it. Basically, the biggest feature is the tensioning. There's a range on the computer readout, digital readout. I don't know if the proper thing to say, it's a computer. I don't know if it's just a digital readout or...
Digital readout probably be the...
But it does have some, when you go through the menus, it says certain features that aren't available yet. And you can connect that. I think you can connect it to the internet for some software upgrades for that screen. So
you can run the bandsaw at a distance, like you can be in another city.
You can turn it on from home.
Yeah, that's cool.
Hey Siri, start the bandsaw.
Warm up the bandsaw. I'm coming to work. That's funny.
You can just set up an action so it knows, like, when you're 5 minutes from home, it starts up the bandsaw.
Yeah, just to get it running, gets it up to speed.
So
that's pretty crazy, though.
Working on that.
You like that saw, though?
I mean, I love it. It's much like when SawStop put out a saw and they had to compete with everybody that was out there. I know Harvey's been making bandsaws, but because this is a big new feature, they really over-engineered it. And it's so sturdy as a saw and just beautifully designed, and they have good aesthetics and the table is nickel-plated. It'll never rust. All their tools now are nickel-plated. All their tables on all their cast iron tables are nickel plated, and it's just it's a beautiful design, and it's really stout. So
does it
video
bother you?
But
will it bother you that all your other cast iron tables will be rusty and this one will be nickel plated?
I'm used to it. There's glue stains and coffee rings on everything I own. This I gave up. This I gave up on caring.
Mm-hmm. You can. I'm sure you could grind that nickel plating off and make it rust just so it fits in with everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna belt sand it off so it's gone. That's funny.
Cool. David, what have you been up to?
Well, I haven't done much since we last chatted because we went away for a few days and just stayed in a little A-frame cabin. And I posted it on my Discord and on my Blue Sky account, and everybody's like, oh, Bob's going to be jealous because you've been wanting to build an A-frame.
When you sent it to the chat, I was like, oh, here we go, Bob. This is it. This is it. And that was from you. I was like, oh. Yeah.
And yeah, that was fun. Cool. It's a tiny little cabin, but a very efficient and good use of space.
So, yeah, I was thinking the other day after you sent that, I was talking to my son about, we were out at the farm, and I was talking about how, you know, I'd wanted to do the big A-frame right there, and I had always kept in mind that I need to sleep six people, so it has to be kind of a certain size and everything. And he's like nearing the end of high school. He's not there yet, but he's close, which means my kids are, they're really close to start leaving the house one by one. So I was like, do I need to make it for six? Or could I just make it smaller? Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. And that's basically, it was part of Kelly's Christmas gift. And it was like a little Airbnb in Eastern Ohio. And I didn't realize that I was just a few minutes away from Kime Lumber. If anybody is familiar with Kime Lumber, it is like it's like a Target size store for woodworkers. So think Woodcraft or Rockler store, but the size of a Target. And then within there, there is a huge lumber store as well. I was there maybe 8 years or so ago, and it's a massive place, but we didn't have time to go. But if you are ever in that part of Ohio, you should go visit that place because it's mind-blowing.
I'm actually going to be in Eastern Ohio for some soccer games. I don't know, next month, a month after, sometime. So maybe I'll have to sneak away and try to make it over. That'd be cool.
Nice.
So tell me about the A-frame. Like, because you sent me that picture of it, but, you know.
Yeah.
It looked like it was it looked like a photo that you found on Instagram and you were like, haha, this is the place we're staying. Because it was like on a lake and had a bunch of beautiful trees behind it.
It's funny because when I was taking the photo, I was like, this photo is not nearly as good as the photo that's on the Airbnb listing. Yeah, because in the Airbnb listing, they show it, you know, there's a fresh coat of snow over everything. And the lighting is perfect where there's a little bit of golden hour sun coming through. Mine, it just feels, there's no leaves on the tree yet. It's cold. It's gray. And I was like, this is a terrible photo, but it's all I got.
I didn't even notice the trees. I was looking at the A-frames.
it's really a beautiful structure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a kind of like a creek, a large creek, small river that kind of ends right in front of it. And so you step out on the deck and then you're at the beginning of this river or creek. And it was just purely to get out of the house, have somebody watch the dogs while we just hang out. And all we did all weekend, we went to a few places to get stuff to eat, but we watched the Paranormal Activity franchise over the weekend, and it was just nice. I like that series. So as far as the building, it's a smaller A-frame. So it's sort of, there's basically, it's just one large room on the inside. The bathroom is the only one that's kind of blocked off. And there is a curtain to separate the bedroom from the front room. But there's no TV in there. There's just a fireplace and a chair couch. I don't know how to describe it, but it was like a very large circular chair that's also a couch. So it's a small couch or a big chair. And we just kind of cuddled up there and hung out for the weekend.
Cool. Awesome. It looked like there were stairs in the back of it, but there aren't stairs. There's not like a loft.
There is a loft. And the stairs This 49-year-old man went up the stairs one time, and that was good enough, because the stairs are not regulation stairs. They're really small steps, and they're really high between each step. And you get up there, and you're like, oh, this is cool. There's like a bathtub up there, and it looks out over where the sun would be setting. But I just didn't feel safe using those stairs.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
Did I tell you guys I played soccer a couple weeks ago?
You played soccer?
I played soccer. So we have this place near us that's it's like a sports facility, and it's a local place, and they have basketball courts, and they have an indoor soccer court, and that's where my kids play indoor soccer. And they have an adult league. My wife has played in the adult league several times. I have never, ever played a game of soccer. Well, I have now, one. But before this, I had never played. They have this adult play, once a week, every Thursday or something like that. And so adults can come, you pay $5, you just go and you pick a side, and people rotate on and off the field, and you play as much or as little as you want and whatever. The problem with it, and the reason I'd never done it before, is because, this is a really long way around, is because it's, quote, adult, meaning 18 and over. So if I were to go out there, it would be me playing with a whole bunch of 18-year-olds, and then a bunch of like people in their 20s who feel like they're 18, and then a bunch of people in their 30s who feel like they're in their 20, and then me. So I don't ever go out and play with them. I have been coercing the people I know that work there to like, hey, you should do like an old people league, you know, like old being 30 plus or 35 plus or something like that. I was shooting for 40 plus, but we didn't get enough people. Anyway, so they decided we're going to do a 30 plus, just you show up, pay $5 and play. And so Janine and I went, this was a couple weeks ago now. And you know, I watch a lot of soccer. I've seen a whole lot of games. I know the game. I understand how to play. I know the rules. I'm fairly fit, but I just don't have experience there. So I just jumped right in and played with a bunch of dudes. She was the only woman there. Played with a whole bunch of dudes who have obviously been playing soccer their entire lives. And I actually did all right. I mean, you know, I probably didn't do well. And I definitely made mistakes and caused goals and stuff a couple of times. But I did score once. That felt really good. But that was, today is Wednesday. That was 12 days ago. No, 10 days, 11 days ago. It was the Saturday before last. Okay, that's how long it's been. I can still feel that game in my quads. And it took me easily a week, if not longer, to not feel completely sore top to bottom. I mean, like, my shoulders were sore. There was a spot in my chest that, like, muscle that hurt because I got knocked down or into a wall or something. Like, it was rough. And they're doing this a couple more times, and I'm honestly trying to decide whether I want to take the abuse. Stairs, I get it. Like, you know, I understand. But I did finally play one, so that was kind of cool.
My house is 3 floors, and I've been to the top floor of the house maybe about once a year. I go up there to make sure there's no raccoons living up there.
So you just have a bunch of space.
And then you're sore for a week.
Just have a bunch of space up there that that doesn't get, like...
There's 4 bedrooms up there, but people go up there. I just never go up there. Gotcha. People are like, hey, what's that thing in the room? I'm like, I haven't been up there in about 12 months. What would describe more to me? I'm like, I'm not sure. Send me a picture from the top floor. No, the cleaning lady goes up there. It gets utilized, but I just never go up there.
Cool. Well, I've been working this week. I've been out at the farm working on the Ghia, and I'm doing a quick video. I mean, I have like a week to do it. Using the new metal fab that I got from Xtool.
Yeah, you showed a little preview of it.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. I mean, I sent you guys some stuff. I put a little bit of stuff on Instagram, and then on our Discord, I've been showing like some more tests and stuff. But it's wild. And I know that I talked to somebody the other day on Instagram that said they've been doing laser welding for 15 years professionally or something like that. And it was a whole different level of. It was like, oh man, I wish I could find that. I don't have, it makes for terrible podcast to look through Instagram messages to try to find things. But basically it was like really, really fine detail, jewelry scale, laser welding. It was just unreal. But he said 15 years or something to that effect. And I had no idea it had been around that long.
I didn't know that either. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting to find, but maybe it's being ramped up in power in the last few years or something. I don't
know. Probably affordability. You know, I tell the story once in a while. In 2000, what was it? No, it was, I was still in my old shop. So it was 99. I found a CNC manufacturing company in Queens, New York. And I went to go look at a CNC machine, a 4x8 CNC machine. It was like $110,000 at the time. It's like, I couldn't even fathom it.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
That was way before the wave. And so these things become more affordable over time.
It was Jerome Kelty. That's who it was. I just found it. And some of the pictures he sent are, it's like jewelry and things on top of a dime. There is a TIE fighter from Star Wars, the spaceship, that is about a third of the width of a dime. Whoa. On top of a dime. That's how small. You know, and like, it's just wild. Anyway, so I've started testing this machine on the Gia, and it's interesting because I'm trying to figure out how to test this thing, but at the same time, trying to figure out how to actually do the work I have to do. On the Gia, I'm taking out the entire back end, and it's not just the back outside. It's the back outside, the back inside, the flat panels, the part, the apron that crosses, and like the entire thing has to be changed. So figuring out where to start, what to take off in what order so that I can put things back and not lose all my reference points and all that stuff. And so it's kind of weird just trying to figure all that out, how to do it, and then try a tool that I'm new to at the same time. And I have a limited amount of time to kind of get this one done. I'm trying to get the video out for when they actually release this tool. And that's like next Thursday. So pretty quick. But anyway, the tests I've done with it for the cleaning, it's crazy. Like that right there, even if that's all it did, it would be worth having. Because even if you were welding with another machine, being able to take that laser and like run it over the seam, put the pieces together that you're going to weld, and then just...
Oh, yeah.
It's clean. It's like perfectly clean. Now you do your weld, you have no contamination.
And so you're getting paint out of body folds and stuff?
Yep. Yeah.
Do you need to clean that seam if you're laser welding?
I mean, I think any... Yeah, well, yeah, if there were paint on it, like if you had two painted surfaces, you could... Somebody. You don't have to grind them down and then fit... You could fit them up and then clean the paint off in place. Or if you have, you know, any contaminant in there that you can get rid of, I think would be better overall. I don't really know if the... I don't know if the laser is enough to, like, really... The welding portion of it is enough to really remove everything. Because the laser at that point is smaller and it's focused on the welding wire. Mm-hmm. And that really fine point of where the weld is happening. Versus with the cleaner, you have a, I think it's 2 mil or 4 mil wide band. And so you're moving that band back and forth and cleaning off, you know, like a stripe at the same time. So you get a much bigger area. But it's crazy. I feel like it's the type of machine. I don't want to say it's the machine, because I know there are other machines that are going to do basically the same thing. It's the type of combo machine that if somebody wanted to get into metalwork, you could get that and have pretty much everything you need except for extreme cases.
That's kind of how they're marketing this machine. I think normally we look at combo machines and we're like, you don't really want a combo machine because it's going to be kind of crappy.
You get comfortable with one thing and you never do the others. That's really what happens with those machines.
Yeah. But this one looks pretty incredible. I saw an Instagram post the other day, somebody using it, and they said my son or daughter, I don't remember, never welded. and then showed their first aluminum weld, which is notoriously much harder. And it was just like a perfect little bead going all the way down this thing. And it just makes it look so much easier and takes away a lot of the friction.
Remember last week, Jimmy, I mentioned this, and you asked if it was one that it would push the gun. And I didn't think it was. Turns out it is. Mm. And so the welds that I showed you guys were, you just have to hold the gun at the correct angle. And once you get it at the correct angle, then the force of the welding wire coming out will push the gun backwards. And so you pull the, there's two triggers on it. There's like a grip trigger and then a finger trigger. You pull those, and then, you know, you're not managing it with your arm. You're just holding it, and man, you can feel it pushing you back, and you have a perfect bead.
That's what you meant by your text.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
It's just wild. I don't know. So I hope that I can take advantage of it, and I'm excited about taking advantage of it, you know, to make
some progress. What is the cutting surface of the enclosure? There's an enclosure you put the handle in.
Yeah, so the CNC portion of it has, it's just a big open bed. Like, it's a... It's a big box.
3x3 or 2x2? Like, what is the cutting
surface? No, I think the cutting area is 2x2. The area is bigger than that because the gantry has to move and all that type of stuff. But I think the cutting area is 2x2. And it's got, you know, the steel kind of grate that you can move back and forth, or you can just open it up. It's got some, which I haven't tested this yet. It's got these plate mounts kind of thing. They're like clamps on the sides. And you can lay a sheet within them and clamp it down and move that up and down to get it right. And so then you can cut pieces out of that without having the honeycomb or anything underneath it. You can just take an open space. And then there's a drawer at the very bottom of the whole machine. So it can cut a bunch of pieces out. You pull the drawer out at the bottom and all your pieces are laying down there just like good to go. So I think you could use that portion of it in a couple different ways depending on what, you know, what material you're using to cut from. But my compressor, my big compressor that I got out there, has a leak in... This is the second leak that this thing has had. But it's got a leak in the control valve. And so when you fill it up, it's just like... Pss, like all the time.
That's annoying.
And it will hold enough pressure to be usable, I think. But you have to have a whole lot of air blowing into the CNC or into the cutting head.
You got to also make sure the air is dry because I'm learning that with my, I mean, I know that with my plasma cutter.
And they sell a dryer with this kit. So
that's good.
I got a dryer and you just have to, you know, run whatever source you're going through there. So I'm using argon for the welding. That's what they recommend, that or nitrogen. And, but I got a big argon tank the other day. And then,
nitrogen for the cutting?
No, just compressed air for the cutting. That's what they recommend. Yeah. And they sell a compressor. I already had that big one, but it's kind of working, kind of not working. So that's going to put my testing for the cutting on hold a little bit until I can get that worked out. But anyway, so that's what I'm doing this week. I got to head out there as soon as we're done here. And then, you know, we talked about like commission work, and I said that I never really do that type of stuff. I actually took on a commission project for a friend of mine.
Get out of here.
Yeah. And it was funny because I think I took it on either right after that show or maybe even before, and I just didn't put together that it was commission work because he and I have been talking about it for a while, and he owns a bunch of properties, has a bunch of tenants, and wanted some stuff to put on the walls and everything. It's just like structural type display stuff. And so it's really simple. But the irony is that I have to cut a bunch of 4x8 sheets, a bunch of holes, like pegboard type holes in a bunch of 4x8 sheets. And I swapped my 5x10 CNC with my friend Andy.
Mm.
So now I have to like hire Andy to use my old machine to cut the pieces that I need for somebody else, which is fine. Like I don't have to do the work, which is, you know, it's cool, but just kind of ironic. So I'm doing that, and then I have to do a whole bunch of other stuff here myself next week, I guess.
You could be like a contractor and just take on the job, and then everybody else you hire, you know, like a contractor has a drywall company and an electrician and a flooring company that they work with.
I'd be all right with that. I mean,
yeah,
that's fine. But it is kind of cool doing something for this friend of mine because he does have a bunch of properties, and a bunch of different types of businesses and tenants. And so I think, and we've talked before about making, like one time he wanted me to make 10 arcade cabinets for this business he was opening. And I ended up not being able to do it. But I think it's one of those people that, like, I know well, he trusts my ability. He's always going to have new things that come up that are kind of interesting. And so if I were to do commission work, it would be for somebody like that, not just, you know, random Facebook, hey, can you build me a book, this kind of stuff. So that's something new, and we'll see. I mean, I may not do any more of it, but I'm working on one of those right now. But I'm doing that, working on the car, finishing up the video, the edge banding thing that's going to come out this weekend. And I have a whole bunch of course shooting that I still have not finished, that I still have to. The schedule's got a little.
I personally have this thought in the back of my head of wanting to do commission work in the future, not now, but when sponsorships eventually dry up, I'm going to need another source of income. And I think, you know, in my later years, it would be really nice to build high-end furniture for high-end clients. And maybe that's my retirement. We'll see.
Yeah. So make a call out right now to high-end clients. Go ahead and think about the furniture you want, and then you can get David to build it.
Only high-end clients, please.
That's right.
There's always what comes first, the client or the project. It's always easier to sell a project you made versus trying to please somebody's expectations.
Do you think that's true? I don't know about that.
No, I'm saying if you make what you want that you know is useful, and then offer that for sale. But if you obviously you do both, you know, you do what comes through the door. But it's always easier to sell something that's already exists, because then people can't nitpick it after they paid you.
Well, I think there's an argument to that. I've dealt with clients in various jobs throughout my life, and they've always, not always, but they can be a pain. It can be very a huge stress point. But making something and then selling it has its own difficulties. I mean, now you have to have a place to store stuff, and you have to find people to buy it. So now you're into marketing and all that. I don't know. I think I personally, when I get to that point, I would rather have a client asking me to make something. But with the caveat of I am the artist, so you get what you get type of thing. You tell me you want a credenza, I will design you a credenza. You get, you know, we'll have one round of feedback, and then it's my art piece from there.
So it's like they get to submit a one word request as to what they want. They say credenza, or like they have to find the right word for end table or whatever, you know.
It's I mean, obviously that is a dream world, but sometimes dreams come true. So I've willed my way into this position. I can probably will my way into that position too.
I would think so. You think about like big artists, like nobody would go to, I don't know, Jeff Koons or Banksy and be like, I would really like a painting of a dog holding a bone in its mouth while wearing, you know, you don't do that. Mm-hmm. You go, can you please paint me a Banksy?
Yeah.
And then you get a Banksy, you know, and like, that's it. So I think, obviously, they're pretty far up there, but I think you could kind of aim for that. I mean, if people want Pachuto work, that's what they care about. It's not that they care about that it has
Pachuto ski.
Yeah,
I'll take that.
Yeah. Well, we had a message, and I can't find the message. So whoever sent this on Patreon, I apologize, but I cannot find the name. I looked beforehand. But the question was something around if any of us have ever found the one. And I don't think they were talking about our people. I think they were talking about, like, your the one bandsaw or the one digital note-taking tool or the one guitar.
Yeah.
And so we kind of briefly mentioned this before we started recording. And I think the thing that's actually interesting to me about the question is less about what is that one thing that you found and more about how do you decide what criteria makes something the ultimate, the final
Yeah.
Because it's different for every thing that you're talking about.
It has to check a lot of boxes.
Yeah, but the boxes are different. And yeah, I think that's the interesting thing. You know what I mean? Like the boxes on a guitar. I'm looking at the guitars I have here hanging on the wall. And I have more than I should say. I have a lot of them. And I don't know that any of those are the one, except for the one of the ones that I made. And it's not perfect. It probably doesn't sound as good as the rest of them. But it's the fact that if I were to have to sell off all my guitars, that's the one that I would have a really hard time selling off. Mm. Because I just, there was a lot of satisfaction in making the shape and doing all of the things about it that made it kind of unique to me. And, but it's hard for me, back to the boxes, it's hard for me to say why that one. Like, what is it about that thing that makes that be the one that I would want to not get rid of? So, I don't know, that's the way I'm thinking about it. But have you all ever found the one of anything?
Well, you talk about bandsaws, and the bandsaw that I got last summer, the one that Keith Rucker restored, which is a 48-inch wheel. It's from 1890. Fay and Egan. It was in a factory that manufactured train cars. It's got a great history. Keith did an impeccable restoration, which is all he ever does. And now it's mine. And it's insane. And I want to build a building just for it. And that is something I want to do. I want to build a building here in the backyard that is just dedicated to that. And when you use it, I did a video recently for the car restoration, the Woody restoration, which is still moving behind the scenes. The Woody restoration, I cut the roof ribs on it. And it's insane. It's rock solid. He balanced the wheels. Nothing vibrates. You could stand a nickel on it. The thing must weigh 4,000 pounds all put together. It's huge. It's oversized. It's a piece of history. So when I turn that on and I start playing with it, I'm like, yeah, this is incredible. But then I sit at the bandsaw, the new Harvey bandsaw that I talked about, and that's rock solid. And it's probably one fifth the size of the other one in the amount of volume it takes up. But that's a great saw too. So the one depends on those boxes, like you said, the boxes it checks. Is it the one? I'm not sure. I just got a new plasma table, which is great. It's still just figuring out the nuances of setting up cuts and stuff. It's all just user training. And then that's a great machine. And then I also just got a new Aeon laser. I got a new, I think it's called the Nova 14. It's 130 watt, cuts right through half inch plywood, no problem. Probably go through 3/4 plywood, but I haven't tried it yet. But when I make something on that, I'm just, whenever you make a successful cut on a laser or a project on a laser, you just go, I feel like a superhero. I could do anything.
Yeah,
you start thinking of all the different things you could do. And so I've certainly felt the feeling as far as tools go. When you open up and slice a piece of wood with a brand new hand plane from Veritas or Melbourne Tools, and you're like, wow, this is insane. You're like, this is like, I'm never going to put this down on the blade. And then 10 minutes later, it flies out of your hand while you're trying to carve something. And you just go, well, that was at the first dent. You try and get that chip out of the blade and you go, well, whatever. But yeah, no, I've had that feeling several times. Even opening up a set of ratchets for the first time, you're like, I'm going to keep these perfect. And then 2 days, you're missing the 10 millimeter. But anytime you crack open a brand new tool.
So you have that feeling when it's new and kind of unmolested, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. I guess so, yeah. No, but the classic antique tools too. I have a bridge port that I bought. I paid a premium price for a low hours bridge port. I bought it from Moscow last summer. And every time I go to use it, I was like, I'm so glad I bought this. Because it's handsome. Because it's not beat up. It doesn't have 30 coats of paint on it. Low hours, so what you see is basically what they made. It doesn't have cut marks in the table. It's basically pristine. You know, it's like a low miles automobile from probably from the 60s, the early 70s this machine is from. And every time I use it, I'm so happy that I got it because, like I said, it's just, I can do so much on it. Because I had all these rinky-dink drill presses, and I was like, let me just get a Bridgeport because I could do woodwork on it, and I could do metalwork on it. It takes up one footprint, and in both cases, it's the ultimate drill press. And metal and wood, and every time I use it, I'm so happy that I got it. Like I said, I paid a little bit more than I wanted to for a Bridgeport, but this is one that was in really beautiful shape. Apparently, if I have it correct, it was at a machine shop in a hospital versus a machine shop in an airplane factory. You know, it's like it got very low hours. Like why? It's when you shop for machine shop tools, you want tools that were in the basement of colleges. Like my other lathe is from the basement of Columbia University, apparently in New York. It was like in the building's machine shop. And same with this Bridgeport. These are very low-hour machines. Nobody even knows how to use them past 1965. So they got no use. They just basically took up space. When I got my lathe, I'll stop talking. I remember talking about my lathe when I got my 10-foot South Bend lathe. I was like, this is cool. And every time I use it, I have that feeling of like, I'll never need another lathe. When I see these more modern ones with all these levers and switches and stuff, I'm like, I like using this. It's like starting up an old car that's still in really good shape. So, yeah, I have that feeling a lot. Not consciously, but now I'll be conscious of it.
Yeah. You're muted, David.
So this is definitely a thing that I struggle with, and I think searching for the one is unhealthy for me because every time I get something that I think is the one, there is that amazing excitement when you first get it, and then it just becomes another thing that you have. You know, recently I sold a bunch of music equipment. I'm trying to downsize to just the things that I need and all the things that I want, so I don't have to worry about anything in the office anymore. And I sold some drum machines, and I got the drum machine that I wanted. It is the one, and it allows me to do all the things that I want to do. And I got to play with it nonstop for a few days, and now it's just another thing in the arsenal. And you know, when I got, you know, to me, the saw stop is one of the best table saws in the world, and it has the technology that I want, but it's not perfect. And I recently backed a Kickstarter for a digital fence, so you can say go to this particular measurement and the fence moves, and then you can use that for repeat cuts, and you can move the fence without worrying and try to get it to exactly where you had it before. And then I'm like, ooh, this is going to be awesome. And then I see like a company like Harvey is releasing a new fence, not a Kickstarter, just a product that they're going to release. And, you know, like, oh, I was going to have the one, and I backed that. And now there's this other company coming out with this thing, and maybe the one I have is not the one. And so I'm always chasing something that I don't always need to be chasing. I need to accept what I have and make what I have. I was telling you guys before we recorded, I have this idea for a video that I want to make about having what you have versus what you want, and how that can help you grow, but also how that is also unhealthy. And I have so much to say about this, but I don't know how to put everything into words. But for me, searching for the one tool, the one shop, the perfect shop, is kind of unhealthy for me.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And so I think one of the things that I think most people struggle with, and I'll say I do too for sure, is contentment. And this is not necessarily about tools. It's about contentment. It's about being okay or enjoying, not even being okay, actively enjoying what you have, where you're at, how things are, regardless, in spite of the things that are not ideal. I mean, that's how I think of contentment. And man, like, that is a tough thing to do in all the different parts of your life. But what a skill to be able to look past the hard stuff, the
things you don't like. Be happy with what you got. Just be happy with what you want.
Be happy, yeah.
Yeah.
And that can make every moment, every relationship, every tool, every shop, every project, every car, it can make everything better, more enjoyable, if we can somehow learn to be content. And that doesn't mean be complacent. That doesn't mean, like, put up with garbage that you don't need to put up with. I'm not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like you said, like, all those tools that are, like, they're really close, you know? Like, they're the... I mean, the saw stop is the same for me. Like, that is... I'm never going to buy another table saw.
Mm-mm.
That is... If it was table saws, that's it. Yep. I don't need anything else. And maybe there is something better. Maybe if I tried a better one, I would go, oh, yeah, this would be cool. But I am 100% content with that as a quality tool that I feel comfortable with and that I feel safe with and, you know, those types of things. Every tool is going to have that potential for... Yeah, it could be better, it could be faster, it could be more powerful, it could have more capacity, it could be whatever, you know, I could always use more space, that kind of, you could always have more clamps, you know, it's that kind of thing, mm-hmm. But goodness gracious, like, if we can be content, all of us, I'm talking to myself, I say us, if we can be content with how things are, and then work to change the things that are bad, not the things that are not ideal, the things that are bad, focus our effort on replacing the tools that are dangerous, the tools that are unsafe. That's a different way to go about, you know, handling the stuff that you have and replacing the stuff that you have. But, and I'm not saying there's anything bad with getting new tools or replacing things that are, you know, you just want a bigger, better one. There's nothing wrong with that. But contentment in general is a struggle, especially with social media. It's easy to look at everybody else's life or situation or skills or whatever and feel uncontent about your thing, you know. I don't really have a whole lot to say, but I agree with you that it can be very unhealthy to constantly chase, you know, to just not be happy with what you have.
And even recently, 5 or 6 months ago, I made this desk organizer. And I was taking notes on what I wanted for this desk organizer for a few weeks so I could have the perfect setup at my desk. And then when I made it, I used it for a little bit and I'm like, this is great. And then after a little bit, I'm like, it's not so great. I'm always searching for perfection and removing friction. And, I don't know. I change and my desktop organization is going to change. And so maybe it needs to be modular and maybe I don't need the one. I just need.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I am also learning that friction is okay. And we want to create. We want to be able to create the things that we want as easily as possible, but sometimes those little hurdles adds problems and complexities and difficulties that helps make the project better because you had to jump through hoops. You had to force your way. You had to figure out things, which actually is a little bit more fun. And so I'm trying to get in that mindset lately.
Yeah. I think you said something a second ago that got this and I can't remember what it was now, but yeah, the idea of looking for the final boss of whatever organizer is probably counter to how life actually works, right? We like the iterative work of making something better towards perfection without actually ever realizing that we're going to get to perfection. Somebody recently, I heard this and I don't know where I heard it, but they said, your life is not a painting. It's a story. And I thought, oh, that's cool. And they said it in the context of your life right now. If you freeze time, your life is not how things are right now. It is not all the faults you have. Is it not all the trauma you have? It is not all of the whatever you have. This is a moment in an ongoing, moving story. And so tomorrow will be a different painting than it is right now. And mm-hmm. I thought, man, like, what a cool thing to think about, that your current circumstances are not the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. Same kind of goes for what we're talking about here. Like,
mm-hmm. everything's evolving.
Everything changes all the time. And that's an opportunity for you to continue to explore desk organizers or find a better bandsaw.
I had a funny experience yesterday, you're talking about what you're talking about. Well, a friend, do you, I don't want to say his name because he doesn't want to announce it yet, and he's going to make an announcement, but our friend lost his shop in your state. Mm. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I only knew because it was mentioned to me.
Right. But I'm saying, but do you know him personally? Have you met him?
I don't believe so.
Well, he lost his shop in a fire, and it'll be announced, and there's going to be a GoFundMe and everything, but I don't know what type of work obligations he has, so I'm not going to say his name just yet, but a close friend lost his entire shop in the state of Kentucky to a fire. Everything's okay, just material. Nobody got hurt. But I walked around yesterday with my camera, and I sent him pictures of about 10 things saying, these are yours. Come take them if you want them. And I don't expect he wants everything because some of them are oddball machines. But I remember each one of those machines as I acquired them going, I can't believe I have one of these.
Mm.
And now I paid for almost all of them, and I'm giving them to him if he wants them. And there's no obligation. I just want to help him get back on his feet. If there's anything out of the several things I showed him he could take, he knows this. But I remember at each point acquiring them going, oh, I'm so glad I'm able to get this. I'm so glad I'm able to get this. I'm so glad I'm able. And now here I am turning around because my wants and needs have evolved either past a more modern version or a more safer version or a different version that looks honestly looks better on camera. That's a big consideration for me. What yeah. looks better on camera? Yeah. What's my handsome vintage? My certain requirements for what I like. And I can't get rid of them. I can't throw them away. So I'm much happier to give them to a friend in need than even try and sell them. I don't really need the money. So I keep them in storage. They sit around. Sometimes they get used. Sometimes they don't get used. But the bottom line is I remember that moment in time of being like, there's like a little bit of like, before I send a picture, I'm like, do I really want to get rid of this? Yes, I've moved past it. Do I really want to? Yes, I've moved past it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of space. So I have a lot of things sitting around.
So I feel that totally from a different perspective. I mean, I feel that way with tools as well. But, like, you know, we've talked about, like, my toys behind me, the toys I've collected over my life and stuff. And I don't really collect. I don't buy a lot of stuff these days. But I remember that feeling that you just described about those things, about collectibles, about things that remind me of my childhood. I remember finding that one figure that I couldn't ever get as a kid, or that one replacement part that, you know, I always lost the thing from this guy and I always found this. And there's such a rush in the getting of the thing. There's not a rush necessarily in the having of the thing. Mm-hmm. And I think when that is the case, you should start saying, like, well, then do I need to have it? If that feeling is not. Now, like I mentioned the guitars before, having that guitar that I made, I hated making the guitar. So the getting was not the interesting part. The having is the interesting part. And I think that's why that is the one that I would want to hang on to versus, you know, some of the other ones. Like, it was really cool to run across that 1969 Mustang and I bought it and that was great, but I don't play that guitar. So do I need to have it? Like, I don't know. But anyway, I feel that way, that same feeling about a lot of collectibles more than I do about tools. But it's the same thing, you know. Yeah. So I don't know. The one thing is, for me, it's a lot more interesting to think about why we would consider something so valuable or final, you know, or ultimate, than it is to think about whether we actually found it or not. Because I think for me, at least, there are very few things that I would say are the one that I, you know, would grab in a fire.
and things that are manufactured and made like a tool, it's really, really difficult to make a machine that is the one, or a tool that is the one, because you have to make it for a bunch of people. And everybody is special. And maybe I think, you know, that saw stop table saw is the perfect table saw for me. There's still imperfections about it. You know, the dust collection on there isn't perfect.
That is very true.
Yes. You know, it winds down pretty fast, but it could wind down a little bit faster. You know, like it will never be perfect. And you have to generalize making these things. Like, my phone is an amazing piece of technology, but it also frustrates me. I was searching last night. I keep bringing up the Apple Intelligence Siri thing with some sort of hand gesture that I'm doing on my phone. And I don't even know how I'm doing it. And I don't even know. And I was searching last night. Why do I keep doing this? And I was searching for the wrong things because I don't know what I'm talking about. And so I'm like, oh, it's just a thing that I'll deal with. But you have to make a phone for millions of people and not for a singular person. And so it's never going to be perfect, even though it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Can I bring up one gripe you reminded me? Does this only happen to me that you text a friend and you put your phone down and you look back and the voice recording thing to send them a voice message has been recording for somebody? Yeah. And it's in red. And then you're like, I don't want to touch this. I don't want to accidentally send it. And then you hit the red stop button.
You're real careful because you don't know what you've been saying for the last 10 minutes.
But there have been times where I've texted somebody and then in my headset I hear bing and I look back and it starts recording. I've done nothing. Nothing. I haven't swiped the screen by accident. I haven't said or done anything out loud to prompt it. It just happens on its own. I always thought I was swiping and doing something wrong, but more now that it's happened so often, I'll literally send you guys a text and then put the phone down and hear bing and look, and then the red line is recording every audio in the room. Stop and then X and it goes away. It could be a
software bug, legitimately. You know, it could be.
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I've been watching the paranormal.
Trying to get people in trouble.
The government, man.
I've been watching the Paranormal Activity franchise movies back to back to back, and so I can easily explain what's going on in the after show.
I knew it wasn't just me. It seems like a internet scam, it's a plot by Apple to get everybody in trouble with back talking to people.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely,
probably. Yeah, there's a lot of money in that. I could see. Cool. Well, any other thoughts on the one? Or
I think the eternal search for the one is cool. You just got to keep doing it. Facebook market is always there. I honestly I am constantly scrolling through Facebook market to satiate that need. I look at Chevys, Cadillacs, trucks, equipment, and I see the coolest things and I'm just like, I have that. Mm. I have that. I don't need that. I have that.
Yeah.
Mm. That's all 100% related to the price. If it's expensive, I'm like, I have that. If it's like very affordable,
and
it's within a 20-mile range, I'm like, I might need that. Even though I have three of them, I might need that. I'm like, I have to rescue that tool from this guy. He doesn't know what he's doing. I have to go get it.
You sound like find my a wife proper and home animals. For it.
Yeah,
my wife and animals. Like, I have to rescue that thing.
You know, you see, like, a Bridgeport sitting in a garage unused, and I'm like, it's only 20 miles away, and it's only $1,000. I have to save it.
I've got one that's unused. You can come save mine if you want to.
Yeah. So the search for the one can be positive or negative. It can be the driving force to help you get to where you want to be. It could be the thing that drives you nuts because you don't have what you want. So it's you gotta force your perspective, the good perspective on it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Cool. Well, whoever sent that, let me know who you are because I just cannot find the message. But thank you for the question. That was good. And if you ever have questions that you want us to talk about or topics you want us to talk about, send them to us on Patreon, which is where we get stuff from people. Speaking of, how about that for a transition? Yeah. I want to thank our Patreon supporters because they're awesome. Big thanks to everybody over there, but especially our top supporters. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from...
Wait, It was Nick Ryan's birthday, April 14th. Happy birthday, Nick.
Happy birthday, Nick. That's awesome. Cool. Where was I? Works by Solo, Chad for Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, who sent me one of my picks today. Thanks, Sean. Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, Matthias Garnow, and a pretty big deal.
Matthias, also, I have all your packages. I'm sorry, I'm slacking.
That's it. Oh. Josh Luther. Also, people like Josh Luther. We got a bunch of people, Josh, that support us, and we're very grateful for all of it. Everybody over there at every level gets the after show. Those top supporters just go above and beyond. They don't have to do that, but we're grateful that they do. Everybody gets the after show, which is another, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of jibber jabber from us after this show. And you get that through Patreon. So if you want to get that show or you just want to help us out, you can go to patreon.com/makingit and support the show. And if you don't, that's okay. We're just glad that you're here and listening and hanging out with us. Do you guys have anything to recommend? Jimmy, do you have something in your eye?
No, I'm trying to, lift my eyebrows. Can you guys lift your eyebrows? Are you independently? Can you do one eyebrow over the other? Oh, wow, Bob, I'm jealous.
I can do one of them. I can't do the other one.
Yeah, see, I'm not good at doing that. I'm not really good at it. But I recommend the studio. I told you guys before we started how funny I thought it was. The studio with Seth Rogen. It's really funny. It talks about big Hollywood movie manufacturing, but it's very relatable from my time in the few TV shows I did. But besides that, it's just super, super funny. The second episode is probably one of the funniest episodes of television I've watched in a really long time. The studio, I think it's on Apple. Check it out.
Will do.
Oh, I am going with... I don't know if you guys know who Mike White is. He is a actor, writer, director. He was the roommate in School of Rock. And it turns out he is the writer of White Lotus. And because White Lotus is big right now, I haven't seen any of the most recent season, but people are drooling over how good this season is, so I'm looking forward to watching it. But I think this 10-year-old interview with Mike White came up because White Lotus is so big right now. And it's this series called Creative Spark, made by the Motion Picture Academy. And it's just a four-minute interview, and it's so good and inspiring. And it turns out there's a whole series of these Creative Spark interviews that are 10 years old. How did I not know about this? They're so good. And cool. I had no idea this guy, who I just thought was a comedian, is writing these hit TV shows.
Yeah, it's an extremely successful franchise.
Yeah.
Awesome. I've got two things. And they were both sent to me by different people, one from Sean and then one from Knox on our Discord. And so the first one is an Instagram account called Nick Habitat. And I don't know anything about the guy except that he has been 3D modeling screws for 3D printing that can be printed flat. So if you think about if you were to print a screw, if you print it on the head pointing upward, then all of the layer lines are across the screw, which makes it really weak. And so you would want to print it on its side, long ways, but then that's a nightmare because you have all the threads and you have support material and all this stuff. And I don't know if he came up with this. I think he found it somewhere else, but then has been working on it. But he basically like sheared off two parallel sides of a screw. So it has threads on two sides and it hits flat on two sides. And so then he made a normal threaded hole, but this flat screw will thread through there. And then so I think once he figured that out, then he's starting to iterate and expand and, you know, and it was just a really interesting kind of aha moment that somebody had to make a cool way to print something functional that is otherwise kind of difficult to print. So that was one. And then the other one was sent to me by Knox on our Discord, and it was a guy on Reddit who made Remember a few weeks back I made a little phone MagSafe phone mount that went behind my monitor and flipped up and everything? This guy saw the video and then made a way better version of it, and he put it on Reddit. And it's like, it's just a panel that slides. It's on a slide that has a lock in the up position and in the down position, so it comes down. And then he made a separate one, the same mechanism, but it's for the phone, like the watch charger, so it's a small version, and they're both up behind his monitor. And he put a little video of them working. So much better. Like, it's a way better idea than mine. But it was really cool to see somebody take the general premise and then, like, do their own much better version of that.
And I kind of want to print his. I freaking love it when somebody takes something that I made and then it inspires them to make their own version. And then their version is so much cooler or better because I'm, because it's inspiring to me. I'm like, oh, man, I could have done that. I'm going to, you know, take that little nugget and apply it to the next project. It's such a good feeling when somebody does that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Cool. Well, that's what I got. You guys got anything else?
I'm going to Maker Central, if anybody wants to come.
Oh.
May 17th, 18th. And then also there's another event at the end of May, 29th and 30th, in Ohio at Weaver Leather. I'm going to be there too. So look up Weaver Leather's Maker event and then Maker Central. And then that's it.
I got a, we'll talk about this in the after show. I got an email from Maker Faire, like a personal email, which is kind of interesting. We'll talk about that in the after show. All right.
That's it.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love you.